This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 126 of the Stacey West podcast. I'm Ben, back after missing out on a chat with Bubs due to house-related shenanigans, and I'm joined by Gaz. Are you well?
Yes, that was easy for you to say, wasn't it, that?
It was, yeah. You know, peek behind the curtain. That was the second shot at the intro.
Because Bubs became Buzz, as in Buzz Lightyear, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I do actually... No, I'm not going to say that because you'll take the piss out of me for about a month.
No, you've got a Buzz Lightyear toy, haven't you?
I have, and it's sat on a shelf.
Looking at you now. To infinity and beyond.
Absolutely. When I got that, it was one of the best days of my life, and I was in my late 20s.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going to send you
a for it so you can take it around the garden for a walk.
Look, I am just as pissed off about the cat lead situation as you are, you know, taking the piss. I am not a fan. I am not a fan of having a cat on a lead. But it's the wife that has it. So, you know, there we go. And I've just sent you a photograph of the shelf that has the Buzz Lightyear on it. And it will do nothing to reinforce the opinion that I have the room of a 10-year-old, because there are other things on there as well. So, but how have you been?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. I've started running.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's utterly bizarre. I always used to take the mick out of anybody that chose to exercise as a recreational pastime. and, you know, it just utterly baffled me. And then the other week, I went for a walk around the wolds with my mum and Fee. My mum took a photo and I just looked at it. I thought, Jesus Christ, I am a fat bastard. A couple of my T-shirts don't do me a lot of... are not particularly flattering over the years. I think they have genuinely got smaller in the wash. And so there was the T-shirt was kind of hanging over and I could put my finger up and tickle the bottom of my belly. And that's not how a T-shirt should be. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to cut out sugary drinks. And then I thought, that's not going to be enough, is it? So I went out, got all the gear, bought myself some trainers, got a new strap for me, my little Fitbit thing. Got some Bluetooth earphones, got one of those things up that you strap on your arm that put your phone in it, wore it once, realised it was gash, give it to Fee, and I've been running. So,
fair enough.
Yeah, so it's overrated, if I'm honest.
As I say, you probably won't catch me running around Brayshaw Heath anytime soon, although we are considering going back to a gym. When you know, we've had our COVID shots, so
That shelf has just downloaded. Wow, is that Lego?
Yep, it's Lego Super Mario.
I mean, but it's not just one bit, is it? It's and loads of it.
There are lots of characters. Yeah,
is that a doll at the end?
What? Where?
Like with green eyeliner and a bob haircut. Stood next to Batman.
That's a character. That's Ellie from The Last of Us in a vinyl.
I was going to say I've played The Last of Us. That's not what she looks like.
Yeah, but she's. If you'd look behind her, Joel's there, and it's Ellie and Joel in like a pop vinyl figure.
Is that Sackboy?
Yes, it is.
Oh, for ladies and gentlemen, I'm just announcing this will be the last episode of the Stacey West podcast until I can find a grown-up to co-present it.
It's my gaming tat shelf.
That's not gaming, they're toys. Gaming is like controllers and screens. I get that. I get retro gaming, but do you know what? Actually, each their own. I collect stickers. I've got piles of football stickers in front of me. I've got a Ronaldo in my hand, the Cristiano Ronaldo match attacks card, star player from when he was at Manchester United. So I can't really say too much. So should we move on and talk about football instead of about trying to out-sad each other?
Well, I was going to say, like, the fact that we are able to kind of get, what, close to 5 minutes into the pod and have not touched on any football whatsoever and just took the piss out of each other is kind of, it's sort of like representative of the week, isn't it? Like,
it's probably not that listenable though, is it?
Well, I'm sure people love it. You know, people say that they enjoy our irreverent conversations, and that's a word that I can say that you can't, as we established.
People say they enjoy running, Ben, but they don't. People say lots of things. Irreverent.
There you go. Yeah. I know you struggled with it beforehand, so we're all good.
Yeah, but we weren't on air, were we? So no proof. Didn't happen.
Unlike me calling you out on Reedy, by the way, which I will find because I've definitely had that conversation with you on a podcast. But yes.
But we didn't do it at the time because we weren't recording the podcast at the time.
I'm sure we were.
No, we weren't, because I went all the way back to episode one to disprove it. And episode one came after the Czech trade final. We started recording the playoff year, which was the year after, so, or which was later. I think it was about three games later we started recording.
The playoff year? We won the Czech trade in the playoff year?
Yeah. I mean, we started recording just towards the playoffs in the playoff year after the Czech trade. Trust me, I've checked.
But anyway, let's talk about football, because, yeah, I mean, my anger has subsided at this point over Saturday. I'm over it. It's all fine. I mean, it's not fine, but I'm over it. So Tuesday was, it was a real anticlimax of a match, I think. Didn't really expect a huge amount from it. I think the biggest thing was Michael obviously said, you know, there's going to be some players that are going to have to prove themselves and audition, if you like, to get in the first team for the playoffs. And I think you summed it up quite well in that I don't really think there were too many that did. I wasn't that invested on Tuesday night. You know, obviously I was, in as much as it's Lincoln City and I'll sit and watch and, you know, I'll support my team, but it didn't feel like a big blow when the goal went in, and then when the second one went in, and then when the third one went in, I was just like, okay, it's fine. It's, you know, we're in the playoffs. Doesn't really matter all that much to me whether we finish third or sixth or any, you know, fourth or fifth. It's just, we're in the playoffs. We've got there now. Let's keep everybody fresh and ready for them. And then, you know, when we go into those games, we can attack them and really give whoever it is that we end up facing a real go over two games. I mean, is there really too much else to put a pin in on Tuesday night?
Oh yeah, absolutely. There's plenty to talk about. We'd be doing a huge disservice if we didn't go into it a little deeper, Ben, wouldn't we? I know that's not what I said off air, but that's
exactly,
you've been trapped me there. Yeah, I'm a bit of a cock, that's why. people, I am when I'm on air. I'm, in real life, I'm quite a nice person at times. But I didn't intend to talk, with all respect, I didn't intend to talk much about it. But actually, as you spoke there, there were a few points that I think we did ought to pick up on. First of all, you mentioned about some players failing their audition. I put that in my article. I think there was one or two players, and let's not beat around the bus. There was James Jones, there was Harry Anderson, there was Anthony Scully. There was a couple of others as well who escapes me at the moment, who were essentially auditioning really for Callum Morton for a place in the playoffs, and they didn't pass. That said, I'm not entirely sure that the players who will definitely play in the playoffs who played on Tuesday night played well. So, you know, it's quite harsh to judge individuals chances on an overall poor team performance. You know, there is only probably one or two players in this squad who, when we've played badly, have continued to play well. Conor McGrandles is one. I think, you know, George Grant probably when we had a bit of a dip after Valentine's Day before Plymouth was playing well when we were not. But other than that, you know, it's tough because James Jones needed a big game. I think Callum Morton needed a big game. Harry and Anthony Scully, I'm not sure would have played anyway. I'm not sure they were actually auditioning. You know, hand on heart, not actually sure James Jones, if he'd scored a hat trick, got four assists, would get into the playoff semi-final team. So call it an audition as much as we want. I think it's just a case of resting a few players and you know, hopefully those that were going to be on the subs bench were going to say, you know, I deserve to come on for 10 minutes at the end. They haven't said that. So I also think the game turned when Tom Hopper and Joe Walsh came on, which I think alleviates some of the reaction I saw, you know, this whole momentum's gone, blah, 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 you know, reactionary stuff. And I think actually them coming on and the game instantly swinging back in our favour, which it did, just proves that when we're at full strength, you know, we're a good side, and it's, you know, we play with confidence. When we've been out of form, we haven't been out of form as a collective team. We've been out of form because we've lost key players from key positions. There hasn't been any period of time. This Lincoln City team has gone three or four games without a win, with not even a full complement of players, but let's say just lacking one first team player. It hasn't happened. The dip in form has always come when several players have been out. So in that respect, you're quite right. There's not a lot of point in talking about Tuesday night. But then I think in the other respect, there is, because you'll look at a 3-1 defeat. I got a couple of messages from fans of other clubs saying, what happens to you? What happens? You know, oh, it's not good going into the playoffs like that, is it? Now, I don't think this Lincoln City Tide are as affected by a poor finish to the season as some of Keith's were. Mm-hmm. You know, the year I think we got beat by Huddersfield, I might be wrong. I think we lost 3-2 to Yeovil on the final game of the season. Actually, we were all right against Huddersfield then, but 06-07 stumbled into the playoffs out of form. I don't think we're out of form. I think the last game we didn't play well, but it was Lincoln reserves. Yeah. When you've got a Lincoln City team with no Liam Bridcut, no Conor McGrandles, no Tom Hopper starting, no Joel Walsh starting, no Brennan Johnson, no Morgan Rogers. That's not Lincoln City, is it? It's not Mike Upton's Lincoln City. It's an EFL trophy team.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there was a little bit of some, you know, annoyed people or annoyed fans on social media, which you expect at this point. You know, if we don't win every game 10-0, then, you know, people are going to be upset and annoyed. But I think some of the criticism that I saw was just ridiculous. Like, you know, oh, well, I paid my 10 quid to see this game and they couldn't be bothered to give us a game. So everybody knew what that game was going to be going into it. If the result on Saturday had been different, the performance on Tuesday would have been different. And that's one thing that really, really came to light, in that a lot of, you know, I've had a few needly messages from a couple of Peterborough fans saying, oh, well, we were going to beat Charlton anyway. So, well, we didn't have anything to play for, and, you know,
you had to bring it up, didn't you? You had to bring it up. You couldn't stay away, could you?
No, because I've had messages from people saying that. I'm like, well, look, ultimately would have been a different game, but it wasn't. So it was the game that we got. And like, I think everybody really should have understood what that game was going into it. And I think to a lesser extent, probably Sunday. And I know you're going to feel very different on that, but I think It was just a really flat night, and it was a game that Charlton had to win. And I think ultimately, for the first half, Charlton didn't look like a team that needed to win that game, did they?
No, they didn't for the second part of the second half either. And the XG doesn't suggest that there was a lot of difference between us. And, you know, I believe firmly in XG, as you know, and it was, ours was 1.03, so we deserved a goal, we scored a goal, and Charlton's was 1.64, so yes, they probably should have won 2-1. Very, very different if Callum Morton scores what is the best chance of the first half by a country mile. I think he thought he was offside as he went through, and I think he hesitated, which is why I didn't put it away. But as I said in an article afterwards, I think Callum's really struggled playing that lone number nine position. Tom Hopper plays every minute of the playoffs if he's fit, and only do we turn to Callum as a number nine if Tom remains on the pitch and we go two up top, or if the game's comfortable. You know, if it's like, if it's 0-0 with 70 minutes to go and Tom's still got it in the tank, Callum's not a number nine. And I'm not saying he's not good enough. I'm not going to come out with statements like that, because that's not true. The players that are struggling at the moment are the players who had spells out with COVID, as in James Jones, Harry Anderson was out injured. Obviously, Callum was out injured. So anyone that's had missed a large portion of the season is finding it difficult, I think, personally, as we move in. You look at shots and shots on target, 9 shots each team, 4 on target each team. Charlton weren't that much better than us. And if they do qualify for the playoffs, and I know we're going to talk about it a little bit more in depth, I have no fear of them when we've got all of our fit first team players on the pitch. I'll be honest, arrogant as it may sound, and I may regret saying this, I don't fear anybody in the playoffs when we're at full strength. I'm not saying we'll beat anybody, but I'm saying that when Lincoln City are at full strength right now, there is nobody that we should be going into the game thinking this is going to be tough. The opposition should be thinking that it's going to be just as tough for them as it is for us. And I don't care how many times you lose 3-1 with half a team to Charlton Athletic, that doesn't change for me.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's something that we've said many times. You know, if this team stays fit for the entire season, we don't need the playoffs. And, you know, it's kind of a victims of circumstance, I guess, is probably the way of putting it as to where we are now. And the fact is that, you know, I think the club posted today, it was 10 years ago that we went down into non-league, and 10 years later we are on the cusp of going into the Championship, which is just a ridiculous turnaround, you know, especially when you consider how long we were down in non-league for. But yeah, dwelling on the past and all the rest of it. So I think that's probably a spot to wrap up Tuesday, because, like we said, it was I kind of expected a bit of a nothing game going into it. And
I don't want to wrap it up. I want to talk about Regan Paul.
Go on then.
Sorry, I know that you're eager to move on from Tuesday, and I can understand why. But I want to talk about Regan Paul, because there seems to be this train of thought that for some reason he isn't good enough. And again, people are entitled to an opinion, so I'm not going to say those people are wrong. What I'm going to put across is my argument as to why they are wrong. And that's because you've got a player here who I think has now played 20 games since signing, which was at the end of January. And his stats actually add up really well. And people can talk all they like about stats, but when you talk about things like crossing, and you've got Regan Paul putting 6 crosses into the box, 2 accurate, so it's not fantastic accuracy, you would assume. That seems like a decent stat. But that 6 was more than Cohen Bramall, Anthony Scully and Harry Anderson combined. Now, you're not telling me, therefore, that it's anything to do with position, because Bramall was on the other side of the field. In terms of a success rate, there's more successful crosses from him than the other 3 combined on that evening as well. He's got defensive work to do. I just don't really get it. His crossing stats are actually very half decent. 2 with success against Peterborough, 3-2 successful against Hull. And in actual fact, they might seem like no low numbers, but they're not too bad. Because if we go to Anthony Scully, and you will hear the keyboard going because I can't have multiple screens open on Y Scout at once. If you go to Anthony Scully, who, bear in mind, has been playing out wide for some of the season, and this isn't intending to call Anthony Scully out, 1 successful cross against Charlton, 1 attempted, 1 successful, 2 attempted, none successful against Peterborough. He played 64 minutes against Shrewsbury, no crosses. 2 crosses, 1 successful. 1 successful cross against Hull. So Regan's actually getting more and more crosses into the box. And again, you'll hear this, the things go, but Cohen Bramall, a player who actually has grown in popularity with people, because I think speed is something that that the fan can see. So when a player goes like shit off a shovel past a fullback, fans see it and go, blimey, Kevin Bramall's a decent player, and he is a decent player. Regan Poole doesn't have that turn of speed. So in actual fact, when Regan Poole, and this applies to Anthony Scully a little bit, get the ball, it looks like they're running in mud, because previously it looks like when Kevin Bramall runs, he's playing FIFA and you've got the finger on the sprint button. Instantly, there's a Regan Poole's not as good as Kevin Bramall kind of mentality going on. But Kevin Bramall's crosses, and bear in mind he's been quite well rated in recent weeks, one against Charlton, not successful. Four against Peterborough, non-successful. 34 minutes against Hull, which to be fair, he came on late, no crosses. Bristol Rovers played the whole game, two crosses, non-accurate. Milton Keynes Dons, four crosses, one accurate. Regan Poole's delivery into the box, no matter what anybody says, he's actually very, very good. And the fact that he's more or less got up to speed is very, very good. I'm utterly baffled as to how and why I'm seeing things online about Regan Poole not being good enough. And I just purely think it's because everybody does need a scapegoat. And that is, it's not me calling fans out, because to a degree, some people need to be able to blame. You need to have blame. Nobody's going to blame Michael Appleton for anything at the moment because of everything that he's achieved. So when they're looking for blame, they will look for individual players, rightly or wrongly. That's the nature of football. You're not going to, it's, in my opinion, it's wrong, but you're never going to stop it. And for some reason, Regan Poole is that person. And I don't fully understand why, to be honest. I think he's going to be a phenomenal player.
I would agree with you. I think he's had an excellent run, and I think, I don't understand where a lot of this is coming from. I mean, my suspicion is potentially due to the fact that, he gave away a penalty against Hull, and people have got that in the back of their mind, and they're thinking, oh, well, he's a bit crap because he gave that penalty away. But yeah, I don't agree with the criticism that's there. I mean, he's kept a lot of forward players quiet, and while the thing is, you've got to remember, or what people need to remember rather, is that he's not necessarily going to be the kind of player that would be getting into that, final third all the time, because he's a right back. I know that the style that we play does, encourage the fullbacks to get forward. It does encourage those players to get into that final third. But overall, it's not his primary role to get forward and put crosses in. So the fact that he is, kind of says a lot for him as a player, that he is getting that, he is getting to that those positions, and he is putting in more crosses than other players on the pitch successfully.
You see, I kind of disagree a little bit, because I think it is their responsibility, Bramall and Poole, to get forward. I think that is Michael's philosophy, is almost to play them as wing backs, and normally you wouldn't expect a fullback to get as many crosses in as a winger. I grant you that, but I think in this style, actually, when our wingers tend to kind of overlap, get in the space behind, and then the ball tends to come back, it may come back to one of the attacking midfielders hanging around, and they play a little triangle, and more often than not, actually the ball does fall to one of the wide players. And I think that's key, because they've got to get forward. In my opinion, that's part of the philosophy. And I think here's another stat for you that I really like about Regan Poole: shots on target. He had more shots on target between the 4-0 win against MK Dons and the final whistle of Peterborough than Callum Morton. More shots on target than our number nine in a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 game period. Okay, that says a little bit about the way that Callum's been dealt with defenders, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't expect a fullback to do that. So in actual fact, I think he gets back very, forward very well. There was a moment on Tuesday where a player cleared a ball, and it was a quick movement, okay? And the player on iFollow, you saw the cross come in. It was a cracking clearance. Michael and Rob didn't pick up on who it was. The reason being, I think Michael said Monsma. But the point is that, I don't want this to sound wrong, but if it's Teo Eden, if it's TJ Ioma at the centre of defence heading that ball away, in a split second as you move your head backwards and forwards, you can recognise it's TJ Ioma. If it's Adam Jackson, Joe Walsh, Lewis Monsma, Regan Poole, in the split second that it happens, it's very hard to pick them out, because they all look very similar on a small screen. I hope that doesn't sound on dodgy ground.
No, but I know what you mean.
But what that means is that the casual observer, even watching on iFollow, if they're listening on the radio, and it's no detriment, not to the detriment of Rob or Michael at all, but if you listen on the radio and they say Monsma and move on, you think Monsma's done the clearance. He hasn't. He's Regan Paul. Easy mistake to make. I would have made it. If you're watching on iFollow, just somebody has cleared the ball. But it was Regan Paul. And that's the point I'm making. He does defensive work very, very well. He gets forward very well. And he's only going to get better in pre-season. Now we can wrap up Charlton.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, it was just... It's been a week where I think people have not really paid too close attention to the, you know, to the results. Now that our place is settled, I guess. I mean, I know we've had... you've had an article from Kate on the site about does it really matter if we're, you know, home or away in the playoffs, which we'll come on to in a little bit. But as we look ahead to Sunday, do we think it's going to be a bit of a different situation, a different prospect? And, you know, will there be more of an urge to finish the season on a high, you know, the regular season on a high, I should say, than there was on Tuesday night? You know, will we see certain players making their returns on Sunday and kind of really putting a full strength team out?
Well, I think we were going to disagree on this, weren't we? Because off air, I think you were suggesting that it might be the same as Charlton. And do correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, to a point, I think my thought is that it's I can almost see, you know, a few more players, well, maybe not a few more players, but like, possibly some of the same players rested and brought on for the last half an hour, you know, second half maybe. But I really don't know what to expect at this point. You know, Michael is surprising me quite a lot.
Well, my thought on this is that Saturday's team is more or less the starting 11 for the first playoff leg. I expect Liam Bridcut to play 90 minutes. I expect George Grant to play 90 minutes. I expect Joe Walsh to start and probably play 60, 65 minutes. I think Tom Hopper will play. I think Brandon Johnson might get 60 minutes if he is fit. Morgan Rogers will play. I think purely resting them on Tuesday was a matter of, you know, we've played Saturday, Tuesday again, going through the season, and it was just time to give players a rest. Now, I think Michael will want to see those players all in one game, firing on all cylinders. I don't think it's a risk. I think you risk taking your foot off the pedal too much. If you go into this game with the same outlook as Charlton, one or two of those players might not be overly happy about being left out. I spoke to Liam Bridcut ahead of the programme article. I actually spoke to him on Tuesday, and he said, you know, every footballer wants to play. Every footballer wants to play, and it is about momentum in terms of their individual performances. I can fully understand resting them on Tuesday because, again, you know, two games in a week, increased fatigue, increased risk of strains, muscle tear. Do you know what I mean? It's the more that you exercise, the more that you are at risk of an injury that's not a kick, not a foul, not an elbow in the face. But I fully expect that Michael will want all of the players that he's going to rely on in the playoffs to have played as close to 90 minutes as possible against Wimbledon. I have no doubt whatsoever Liam Bridcut, the intention with Liam Bridcut will be 90 minutes, 75 at the very, very least. And I don't think it's as much about winning, losing or drawing the game. Maybe wouldn't go as far as to say it doesn't matter, because I think to a degree it matters to fans. But yeah, Michael, I think, tends to point out that his performances that have mattered. He feels that in picking up 1 point from two games against Peterborough and Hull, actually, we did incredibly well because we deserved a point from Hull and three from Peterborough. And if you take that into the playoffs and you're still playing well and you're still in form, then it is the blow of a whistle, the rub of a green, the bounce of a ball that defeats you. It's not the fact that you've stumbled in. And you know, in terms of form can take come in two different ways. It can be results. People just look at it and go, well, Lincoln have lost that, drawn that, won that, lost that. Well, if anyone won in four, they're not in good form. Or you can look at the performances and actually Charlton, yeah, didn't play well. Peterborough very well, beat Shrewsbury. Hull, we played well, in my opinion. Beat Burton, beat Bristol Rovers, beat Milton Keynes Dons. So in actual fact, you're then talking about 6-7 games where we are in form in terms of the performances we're putting in. The results don't reflect that, But we won't be playing two teams who are already promoted or will be promoted to the Championship in Hull and Peterborough. So I think that you play a full team on Sunday as much as possible, go out, get the minutes under the belt, and then ensure that they are ready for the big one.
Absolutely. I think you've convinced me there in your little, in the way that only you can do, Gaz.
Would you like me to convince you why John Bosby giving that penalty was a good thing?
No, because I've put it to bed now. I'm over it.
Okay, here's why not taking the battle for automatic promotion to the last day is a good thing then. How about that? Do you want that quick?
Go on.
Let's say we beat Peterborough. Okay, so then we need to go and beat Charlton. So you put your full first team out again. You go and beat Charlton, let's say. So then you go into the final game of the season against Wimbledon. If we win, we need Peterborough to lose. Correct?
Yeah.
We win, go hell for leather, Peterborough draw. They go up. We've then played three games in the space of 8 days with all of our first team players going hell for leather for promotion, and we're still in the same position that will be at 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon going into the playoffs. But instead of having rested players, given some minutes to some of the fringe players, and kind of carried our squad through nicely into the playoffs, we're nursing injuries, we're nursing knocks. We may have lost one of the players who's returning. Joe Walsh perhaps hasn't had an opportunity to come back. That's why, in actual fact, I think we were going to go into the playoffs anyway as soon as we lost to Hull. That was when I think our automatic promotion hopes genuinely faded. And at that point, I actually think it was better for the club that we've had two games to cushion ourselves going into the playoffs than going hell for leather. Of course, if Peterborough were to have lost, and you never know what's going to happen, I would rather have gone up automatically. But I was resigned to the playoffs, I think, after the Hull game. So I had no stress going into the Peterborough game. And I just think it's the best thing for the club to go into the playoffs this way than having had to fight. And let's also face disappointment, because if you beat Wimbledon and then you're on the pitch waiting for Peter's result to come through and they've drawn, you've got to pick yourself back up from a major disappointment. Our major disappointment was a week or so ago now. By the time the playoffs come around, there will have been two games. Mindset's changed.
All right. You've not convinced me, but I can see what you're saying. Yeah. It's it almost makes me want to say, you know what, I wouldn't mind playing poker against Gaz, because he's going to be one of those people who's like, well, I've got good cards, but Ben might have better cards, so I'm just going to fold.
That's absolutely not the right analogy at all. You wouldn't want to play poker at me, because actually I've got an analytical mind from Hull City and I'm already thinking four moves ahead. I'm already have
that works
one
for
eye.
Chess.
No, it works for poker. I've already got one eye on what might be on the river. I already know roughly what people have got around their hands. It doesn't matter if I'm holding pocket aces or a two and a seven. Poker's all about analytics. Trust me, I know. I write two or three articles about poker a day. Every single bloody day. So I could tell you all about online poker, man. Why online poker is experiencing a resurgence. How much the gaming industry in America is expected to go up, CAGR, by 2025.
Oh, dear. Sorry, I know.
I can even tell you former NFL players who now make a living playing poker.
I know you were giving a valiant defense there, or a valiant, you know, explanation of why you would beat me at poker, but all I could see while you were saying that was the scene in The Office where Gareth Keenan's explaining to the woman why he'd beat her at top trumps every time, and where he's like, I'll know from the cards in my hand, the cards that you've got in your hand, you will never win. He's getting really aggressive towards it. That's all I could think of.
I wasn't getting aggressive towards it.
I know you weren't, but like that explanation. Anyway, let's move on. How do we see the result going? I mean, obviously, you know, like you said, I think if we're expecting as close to a full strength team as possible, I can't really see too much of a, again, this is going to sound really arrogant, but I can't see too much of a problem on Sunday. And you know, I think it would be nice. I suppose it would be nice to end the season on a, you know, regular season on a win. But I mean, there's nothing that either team really have to play for at this point, is there?
No, I mean, I think all things being equal, we win the game. I think you've got, it's going to pain me to say this, you've got the Palmer factor, Ollie, not Alex. You know, he's king shithouse and he's going to want to do whatever he can to stick one to Lincoln City. I actually think Wimbledon have done very well over the last 6 to 8 weeks to stay up. I think they're a decent side. I think they're always going to struggle towards the bottom of the division, but I think that you know, they're not going to come here and roll over. Players are playing for a contract. I think probably when you look at the playoffs as it stands now is how it's probably likely to finish. So I can see us winning the game. I can see Sunderland beating Northampton. I think Blackpool have got a, what you might class as relatively straightforward game at home to Bristol Rovers as well. So yeah, it doesn't matter, but you do want to see, if we do play the full first team, you want to see shades of how the team is going to play in the playoffs.
I can't see too much outside of, you know, what we've said there. It's going to be, I think it'd be, like I said, nice to see the season out with a win, and we'll go into the playoffs.
How unusual is it to go into the final game of a season and there's only one thing to be decided? The automatics sorted, the four relegation spots are sorted, and what are the playoffs? Portsmouth at home to Accrington, Charlton at home to Hull. That's a tough one. I think Charlton will struggle there. And Oxford and Burton. I can actually see Oxford making it, if I'm honest. I can see Accrington holding Portsmouth. I can see Hull and Charlton being a draw. I mean, Charlton could win it because of Nigel Adkins wanting to beat his former team, and it's that sort of narrative. But I actually think Oxford beat Burton. And obviously, if Portsmouth don't beat Accrington and Oxford win, then Oxford are into the playoffs, and I think they'll get there.
Interesting. I mean, I personally, I can see it. I think the teams that are in there now will be the teams that are, you know, the four that compete, contest the playoffs. Whether that's going to be in the order that they're in or not, I don't know. I mean, obviously Portsmouth can't finish any higher than sixth, but whether it's going to be, you know, us away first or us at home first, I don't really know. And that kind of leads me into some of the questions that we've got, because I don't really think there's anything else to talk about in terms of the games. But you did ask for some questions, and first one we may as well ask is Kate. And Kate Jackson says, personal views on if home first or second leg actually makes that much of a difference, especially in COVID times. No. I don't think it does at all. I think I said it after the game, and I think you agreed with me, which, you know, there have been two tweets this week that I've wanted to frame. And they're both replies to the same thing that I put out. I said that I didn't really mind who, let me see if I can find it.
This is going to be good listening if you're scrolling through Twitter. Do you want me to sing a song while you do it?
No, it's fine. Here we go. Because I said, you know, I think you said, yep, that's my thoughts too. And Andy Pearson said, I hate to say it, but I agree with everything that you've said, Ben. And I replied and I said, I'm framing this tweet because I'm just going to have that one moment where Andy agreed with me. And you did as well. It was a glorious night. But, I mean, normally,
did you plagiarise the tweet from somebody respectable?
No, I bloody didn't. I don't plagiarise, Gary.
It wasn't one of my tweets, was it, that you've copied and pasted? That's why I agreed with it.
I would never plagiarise. What a horrible accusation to sling at a fellow writer.
I wouldn't call tweeting writing.
Hey, I've got a website where I write things about video games.
Yeah, I'm not talking about your website. I'm talking about tweeting. I don't, because you've actually been plagiarized on your website, if I remember correctly, as well. So,
yeah, some people have ripped entire articles and posted them. Anyway, I don't think it makes a difference. I think we're going to be. Normally, obviously, it would do. I think the second leg at home is kind of what you want, particularly when you have full houses. But I think the restrictions that are going to be put in place, if we are indeed allowed fans into the stadium, is going to be so similar in terms of a game, in terms of an atmosphere, because you're not going to have that full house roaring you on. And I think in some instances, particularly if, you know, we get Sunderland, if you're having to have a smaller amount of fans in the Stadium of Light, I think that could be detrimental to Sunderland, because you're not going to have, you know, that wall of noise, because the fans are going to be quite spread out.
Okay. I've got 2 points to make, I think, on that. The first one, I actually think, and the stats might not back me up, and normally I rely on stats, I actually prefer to be at home in the first leg. Okay. Because you look back to Scunthorpe. Yep. So we played Scunthorpe. We were at home in the first leg. That's our roll of the dice. And we won 5-3. Psychologically, they're losing the game when they go at home. Doesn't matter where. It doesn't matter that it's the second leg and they can go win 3-0, in my opinion. And I know we saw differently with Northampton and Cheltenham last season. But Huddersfield, we had the second leg away. We'd already lost the game. But then you go there with your tails up a little bit as well. They're then having to defend the lead. I think that whoever is at home in the, in the first leg, in my opinion, I prefer that. Now, whether footballers would be the same or not, I don't know. Don't think it matters as much in COVID times, because as we've proven, actually, we're better away from home. Yeah. But then that plays into, we maybe want the home leg first because we've got more chance of getting a result in the away leg. But would you rather know what you need to do in terms of pulling back a deficit, or would you rather know what you need to do in terms of protecting a lead? I don't know which is, do you know what I mean? Obviously, you'd rather win the first leg, but... And going into the Sunderland point, I actually disagree, because I think because it's a portion of your stadium's capacity and not just 2,500 in Sinsel Bank, 2,500 in the Stadium of Light, Sunderland are the ones that will benefit the most from having supporters in the stadium. Because let's say it's Sunderland that we get, and at the moment, barring a miracle with Bristol Rovers and Blackpool, it's going to be Sunderland. We play the first leg at home. Yeah, we've got 2,500 fans in the stadium, 4,500 fans out the stadium, because I guarantee you if I don't get a ticket, I'm outside the ground. No shame whatsoever in that. 100%, I'll be there one way or another, even if I can't see the game. So we do that. You get a point, you get a result, win, draw, whatever. Go to Stadium of Light, 48,000 capacity. So you can have either, I think it's a quarter of your capacity, or 10,000, whichever's lowest. Mm. So there'll be 10,000 Sunderland fans in there. Now, I don't care how spread out 10,000 fans are. They're going to make a lot of noise. There was a lot of noise there, the Millennium Stadium, the first time we went. And that was, I think, what, 20-odd thousand fans in a 70,000 capacity stadium? Yeah. For me, I actually think it's a little bit unfair. I think that you should be allowed a portion of your average attendance, not your capacity. And I think that should be for sporting integrity. I understand that the COVID rules are not based around sporting integrity, they're based around safety. But I think it favours those with bigger grounds who have got fewer fans. Now, Carlisle, I don't think, can make the League Two playoffs. I might be wrong, I haven't looked at it. But Brunton Park is huge. And so proportionally, I think if they made the playoffs and were allowed supporters in on that basis, they'd be full. They'd have all their supporters in. And how would that be fair if they then played? And I know your heart's not going to bleed for them, but if they then played somebody like Forest Green, no, that's a bad example because they get bugger all fans anyway. If they played somebody that had a smaller ground but nearly filled it,
let's you see say what Salford. I mean? It's not, it, you know.
Yeah, a small ground, even a Cheltenham or something like that. I know they've automatically come up, but, you know, or somebody that's got a 9,000 stadium that's getting 6,000 fans in, whereas in actual fact, that would then mean that they could only have, 2,000 maybe? Mm. I know that there's no common sensible way to do it, but I do think that having fans back, everyone's delighted that fans are back. I understand that. I think Lincoln fans can't wait to get back in. But I actually think that it could favour Sunderland in the playoffs unfairly. And Portsmouth as well, to a degree, you know, because their capacity is 14 or 15,000. I think it's unfair that it's based on capacity. Their average crowd is that. Fratton Park is...
Fratton Park's more than that. But anyway, I see what you mean. I think it's probably partly because it's been so long since I've been in a football stadium at all that it's like, what does that noise, you know, what does that noise relate to? I mean, obviously, you said about the Millennium Stadium there in the first year, and that, to be honest, is something that I didn't really think about. But that was a hell of a noise. That was a hell of a noise that time. But we'll see what happens. I just think it's going to be a very, very interesting few weeks. And obviously, is it the 17th that they start? Or is that
week commencing. I think we play 18th or 19th.
Right.
Would be the first leg. And then I think, I might be wrong, it might be 17th or 18th, actually. It might be the Monday or Tuesday. We really should have researched this. League One playoffs. Let's let's do that and let's have a look and see when they are. It's definitely week commencing the 17th,
right?
And it is the semi-finals for League One. 18th and 19th, so I was correct, the Tuesday and Wednesday. And then the semi-finals, second leg, 21st and 22nd. So if we played on Tuesday the 18th, we would then play on the Friday the 21st. And if we played on Wednesday the 19th, we would then play Saturday the 22nd.
Okay.
So you would think that it would probably be better to play on the Tuesday because you would get a couple of hours extra break. Whereas, because the Saturday would be a 3 o'clock kickoff, whereas the Wednesday would be a night time, but it would be negligible. It would. All I'm happy about, and it's terrible, isn't it, that we lost to Charlton, and that means that we're likely to finish fifth or sixth. So I will be here for the first leg. Whereas the second, if we finished higher up the second leg at home, I would have been in Cornwall.
Selfish. Let's just say you would have been in Cornwall until about, what, 3 or 4 hours before kickoff, and then you would have mysteriously had to nip out and get a couple of cans and not come back for the rest of the night.
Yeah. You've met Theo, I assume. She's mild-mannered, but like Clark Kent, no, like Hulk. If I was to do something like that, she's putting an awful lot of weight in this holiday. You know, it's the first one since, obviously, COVID and everything, so there is... She's not even that happy that I've said that I'll do Match Day Live and watch the game from the holiday cottage. She's like, you're going to watch the game as well? Well, if there's a chance of us getting to Wembley, I'm not going to miss the game. So,
yeah, I mean, I had a conversation with my boss on... When I say my boss, I mean my boss at work, not Rage.
Not Rage,
On Monday. No. On Tuesday, sorry, it wasn't Monday because we were off Bank Holiday, wasn't it? So Tuesday, asked me how my weekend went. I said, let's just skip over that. And he said, oh, was it just football? And he is not a sporting man. And the words, it's just a game, were used in admittedly partial jest, but I was still not a happy chappy.
How's the new job search going?
Anyway. Right, okay, so let's move on to some more questions. We've got Callum Morton, bring back on loan or not from the shirt man?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm afraid not. It doesn't fit the style of play that Michael wants to play. And I think if we were to bring him back, I think it would be a challenging season for him because I don't think that it's our setup is the right setup. I think that's been evident since he's come back. I think he's a good player, but I think that our approach and playing him as a number nine back to goal is not what he's about. And I think his confidence, if he were to come back over the course of a year and were persistently played in that role, would take a knock. And I think Callum Morton is best served next season going to a team who people think might be lower half League One, but in actual fact could do better. So a Crewe, for instance, a team that plays two up top, an Accrington, where he's going to play every game, he's going to play it in the position he wants to play it in, and he's going to benefit. And people would look at it and go, well, why didn't he score for us? Not understanding the different systems. So that's my thought anyway.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. It's not a slight on him. He's obviously a very talented footballer, and he's shown it with a couple of the goals that he scored. You know, I mean, obviously he hasn't scored a huge amount this season, but that's partly because he's been out a lot of it through injury. But when he's been able to get away from his defender and get that, you know, get the goal, we've seen he's got a really good eye for goal and a really good, you know, excuse me, really good work rate. But I just don't think he, like you say, I don't think he fits that lone striker role. As much as it would be nice to see what he can do over a full season, I just don't think he would, like you said, fit within the squad that we've got. So,
yeah, and don't forget, you say that he showed a really good eye for goal, but actually, you know, he should have buried those chances against Charlton. And I'm the first one to defend a striker who misses a chance, Tom Hopper against Peterborough. But I don't think that us and Callum Morton are a good fit.
I'm trying to think of who it was that he scored against, because it was a really, really, like, really cute finish.
Sunderland or Fleetwood. They were the two recent ones.
I think it was it
Fleetwood was when he came on, and
Fleetwood at home,
Alex
wasn't
Palmer
it?
Got the, yeah, Alex Palmer got the assist.
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
But the finish against Sunderland was great. It showed a real nice striker's instinct. But I just think his confidence has been knocked a little bit. When you've listened to him talk in interviews and he talked about it not being his usual position, he sounds to me like a player who's trying to make it work. And, you know, it's better for him. Yeah, I think it's different for strikers. You look at defenders and they're much more flexible. TJ Ioma, for instance, is a player who looks just as comfortable at centre-back as right-back. And there's a degree of flexibility there because you're still playing with the game in front of you almost. You know, a defender doesn't play with his back to the opposition goal. He plays with his back to his own goal, wherever he is on the pitch. I think a striker is one of those few areas where, you know, you play with your back to goal, you play as one of a two, you play slightly to the right in the channels. You know, the striker's role probably is much more varied. A centre-back's a centre-back. You know, you're either one of a two, one of a three, or you're a full-back, but it doesn't change a lot.
It's the conversation we had about Tom Hopper earlier in the season, isn't it? You know, we said that, you know, that Tom Hopper is kind of the player that will force those chances. You know, his work rate's there, and the fact is that he's not going to be getting 20 goals a season, but he provides that opportunity for other players. And I think the instant comparison that I had in my head for Callum Morton is almost a bit like the way that we were talking before we played Sunderland about Charlie Wyke, where you say, if you can keep the delivery quiet, then, you know, he won't score. And I think the type of delivery and the type of, you know, football that we're playing in order to get the ball up to Callum Morton isn't the kind of football that he would thrive on for goals, because I think he needs the deliveries to come to him where he has somebody to run off or he has somebody to peel away from. And you've got that partnered striker like Tom Hopper, for example, who would do the hard work, almost like that number 10, you know, the sort of old school number 10, you know, the sort of the striking partnership where you have the player that does the dirty stuff and then gets the ball across to the number nine who just slots it home. I think that's possibly where Callum Morton would fit in. And again, it's not necessarily our style.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to. There's a couple of strikers in our division that I would like to see join us. I think that's one area that Michael will really look to strengthen. And that's not to Tom's detriment, because, you know, we're quite right. We talk about in playing not the Messi style false nine, but it's still a false nine, in my opinion. But, you know, he isn't as clinical as you would like at times. I think Tom has had a good season, probably by his own admission. He could have had five more goals on top of what he's got with some of the chances he's missed. I mean, there's three or four that spring to mind. There's one in particular, which was Crewe. I think when we were at Crewe, we missed a sitter. Obviously, there was the Peterborough one. There's a couple of others. Now, he's a player who I think has a future at the club. He's a player I think we can use in certain situations. But I definitely think that we need a like-for-like change. And the thing is, if Michael's going to bring another striker in to complement the squad, any manager's going to want to bring in better than he already has. So he's going to be looking for somebody who is... or who looks better than Tom Hopper. So then it's going to be tough. I mean, it would be good for the club because we'd have that real competition for places. And I had a chat with my friend Chris last night, and he said, yeah, I'd love to see us sign Jaden Stockley. And I know Michael Horton was kind of saying the same sort of thing as well. But I don't know. I don't know. We won't get him. I really like Dion Charles at Accrington, but we need a Jerry Yates figure. Really impressed with Jerry Yates. Lots of work rate, but also he can switch his game at the same time to become the nine.
Who's the lad at Bristol Rovers that came on?
Brandon Hanlon.
No, the big unit of a lad. Can't remember his bloody name.
Jordan Iunga?
That's the one.
He started the game.
Did he come on?
Yeah, Hanlon come on. Iunga started.
Oh, my bad. Yes, I got those. And yeah, that's almost the kind of player that either I would like to see come in, or is the kind of player that I think would benefit somebody like Callum Morton.
Okay. Yeah, I've kind of moved on from Morton. I'm just thinking.
Well, no, I know. But yeah, so that to me is kind of, yeah, that it kind of fills two spots there. I think I would potentially like to see them come into Lincoln, or, you know, he would do well with Callum Morton. But yeah, we're moving away from that now. So I think probably it's a question that we're sort of already answering. But Adam Johns asks, regardless of where we are next season, how might Michael Appleton look to strengthen the squad without having this season's loanee successes, assuming they don't come back again? I think it's probably fair to assume that they won't be coming back unless we go up. And then I can potentially see one, maybe two back.
I think if we go up, I can see two back in... Morgan Rogers and TJ Ioma. I don't think we get Alex Palmer back, because I think if West Brom come down, which looks almost certain, and they sell Sam Johnson, Palmer could well be their first choice goalkeeper. If not, we'll probably stay there as their reserve. Morton we could get back, but we've just discussed we probably wouldn't be rubbing our hands with glee at the prospect in terms of our squad. Brennan Johnson, no chance. I think if we stay in League One, there is an outside chance that TJ comes back.
Okay.
An outside chance, not a nailed on one. I did an interview with him the other week, which unfortunately I then lost due to a corrupted memory card and couldn't transcribe. So it was more like a conversation with him that never got published. Yeah. And he basically alluded to the fact that all he wants to do now is play senior football. And if he's not going to get that at Spurs, he'll be looking for another loan. And I just got the impression that there's a potential there. Now, with Morgan Rogers, Pete, chatting to Pete the other day, he said he feels that Morgan Rogers could go to a Brighton or somebody like that and do very, very well in the lower half of the Premier League. I think that's too early. And I think if he makes a move to a Championship, bearing in mind he's only 18/19 by the time the season rolls round, you've got a danger of the Ben Woodburn effect. Ben Woodburn was, you know, hot shit at Liverpool, and everybody wanted him. They loaned him to Sheffield United. The loan was an utter disaster. He played about four games. Since then, his career's just collapsed. His confidence has gone. He hasn't had any senior football. He's suffered injuries. He can't get into the Oxford side now on loan from Liverpool. You know, he looks a spent force. I don't think he is, but he looks it. Now, the danger with Morgan Rogers is that happens again, in that they loan him to a top-end Championship side. He's a very good player, but there's a lot to learn. He's a rough diamond. We've seen his development over the last 3 or 4 months in terms of his tracking back his work rate. So they send him to a team who perhaps don't have the same record with youngsters, who are expecting the spark of brilliance from Morgan Rogers. Doesn't get a game, confidence goes. Maybe, having seen him for the 6 months at Lincoln, Man City think he'll benefit from another season there. Maybe. And it's a massive maybe. I could actually see him going back on loan to West Brom, where he came from. But.
Okay. I mean, I'd personally think that they're the two likely ones for me as well. Like you said, no chance that that we're going to get Brennan Johnson back, particularly some of the numbers that are being thrown around at the moment. And I think you're spot on about Alex Palmer. I think he'll be going back. I think there was some news that I saw the other day which suggested that that's going to be the case anyway. Are they getting rid of one of the keepers now?
Probably Sam Johnson. He's the former Manchester United lad that I think they could get a good big fee for, which will help if they come down.
Yeah, and I'm sure I saw something the other day that basically said that's more or less a done deal. But other than that, you know, how might we be looking to strengthen the squad? I mean, obviously we're going to need a keeper. I think midfield wise, I think he's kind of been almost spoilt for choice with some of them. Obviously that includes a couple of, you know, loanees at the moment. So we may need to look at strengthening a couple in there. And it's, you know, it'll be a transfer window. It will be Lincoln City, so they will be looking for a striker. That's just the rules.
Sorry, loanees in midfield, who?
Well, sorry, I'm counting Brennan Johnson attack. And yeah, you know, yeah. I'm counting them as attacking midfielders.
Yeah, midfield, no chance. I mean, I said that though last year, and then we signed somebody, but with Grant, Eden, McGrandles and Bridcut and Max Sanders, who I think will play in an increasing role next season. You've got five midfielders going into three positions. Yeah. James Jones as well. So
I was counting Rodgers and Johnson in there, but yeah. if you don't count those and you just count the three sort of central roles, or you know, if you discount the second half, the second third of the field, I guess, then yeah, I'd probably agree with you. I think I can
see us going for wide players on permanent deals who are currently in League One but could play higher. So there was rumours, I think, in the winter that we were in for Jordan Graham at Gillingham. I think he's out of contract this year. He wouldn't command the fee at Gillingham. I really like him. And I know Gillingham fans would be really gutted if he left for a club that they deem to be the same size as them, which you know, we are. There's not a lot between us and Gillingham, no matter what we say, you know, what we think we are. We're very similar sized clubs. There's the boy at Crewe's out of contract as well. Is it Ainsley? It's Ryan Ainsley. I like the look of him. He's like almost like another James Jones. I think Michael might look at that. There's a lad coming out of contract to MK Dons who I really rate, and I've rated him every time I've seen him, Jordan Houghton. He's been released by MK Dons. He's a player. He's been desperately unlucky with injuries at MK Dons, and he's a player I like. I mean, these are just, you know, they're not what I think Michael will particularly sign, but he's going to look still for the sort of player that he can turn around. So there'll be players probably from Premier League clubs who are being released who he may look at. But we're not going to make huge amounts, huge numbers, because we've got a very, very settled squad. And there's another lad at Crewe as well. And he's a defensive midfielder who's done really well this season, who I've liked the look of.
I mean, I think the other thing as well to bring up on that point is that I don't think, you know, the players that Michael's probably going to be looking at bringing in, it's not necessarily going to be players that we know, because of the way that he likes to do the business. You know, likes to bring in a young player, similar to what, you know, the way Keith scoured non-league back in the day. He will bring in a younger player that we might not necessarily have heard of.
Yeah, and, good point.
You know, and develop them from there. So, yeah, I mean, I think, obviously, it's basically the keeper and the attack that I think will need strengthening.
It's the two Crewe players I've got mixed up. It's Ryan Wintle, who plays holding midfielder. It's Callum Ainley. But he's Callum Ainley's 23, and he's a little bit like a Brennan Johnson figure in that he can play central midfield, attacking midfield, on the wing as well. We've seen this year, you're quite right when you say about bringing the young players in, because that's something Michael certainly does, the players that we don't know. I mean, who had heard of Max Sanders before he signed? But look at Paul Bramall, McGrandles, James Jones. Mm. He does also go for players that are established at this level who can kick on to the next level and use Lincoln City as the springboard. And it wouldn't surprise me you know, he goes to Crewe for James Jones. He's gone to MK Dons for three players now. It really wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't have an eye on a team that plays similar football to us, which is why I think we've lent on MK Dons and Crewe, because they play very, very similar possession-based football, but with a little bit more purpose and the Michael Appleton magic. So Ryan Wintle, I think, is the one that really stood out for me. But he's a holding midfielder, which goes against what I said a minute ago. You know, that whole, oh, I shot you now, I like wine. So, but again, yeah, you don't know with Michael.
No, absolutely. Roy asks, Portsmouth, Charlton or Oxford for the playoff final spot, or for the final playoff spot. Sorry. I had that very mixed up. I still think Portsmouth, mainly because, and I know you hate narratives in football, it kind of sets up the narrative in the worst / best way possible. And I can just see it happening.
So why does Oxford not? Oxford get in, beat Blackpool, we finally play them at Wembley. We were denied the chance of meeting each other in the EFL final because both teams were beaten in the semi-finals. Then we reverse our semi-final defeat against Sunderland to make the final where Oxford are waiting. And it's the Michael Appleton versus Oxford at Wembley all over again.
True.
I think Oxford will do it. I don't think Oxford would make the playoff final. I think,
it was the final playoff spot, not the playoff final spot.
Yeah, no, I think Oxford make the final playoff spot, but I don't think they make the playoff final. I think if they get through, they get beat by Blackpool. I think we play Sunderland. It's anybody's game, but I say we win because they've got very few centre halves, and then we meet Blackpool in the final. That's my prediction.
Cool. Right, so that's kind of the footballing questions out of the way, and as you'd expect, we have some nonsense questions as well. So Sam asks, if you could be any type of potato, what would it be?
A slimmer one than I am now.
I mean, you could just say a chip in that instance then.
Yeah. Well, no, because they're soaked in saturated fats. That's not very healthy, Ben. If I could be any potato, I'd be the one with the glasses and I'd have matchsticks for arms and legs, you know, like a Mr. Potato Head type thing. Or I'd be a potato stamp, you know, like they use in primary school where you stamp paint all over the wall with potato. Did you ever do that? Or did you go to a primary school that actually had brushes and things?
I think we did both. But no, I don't know. Maris Piper. Why not? Cause it's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. Johnny D says, are you a fan of the KLF? Initially I was about to say I think they're unbelievable, and then I remembered that that's EMF, not KLF. So I can't say that I'm a huge fan because I've not heard a huge amount by them. About yourself?
I am an ancient of Moo Moo. So I was I did used to like the KLF. Obviously the KLF were originally, they did Doctor in the TARDIS, didn't they? Doctor in the TARDIS. You remember that? No, that was about 88.
I was two.
And then they did with Tammy Wynette, Justified and Their Ancient, and they drive a nice green van to go to the top. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Love that song.
God, I hope Stu can clip some of these this week.
And he despises it because whenever I play it, they call me up in Tennessee. It just gets in your head. I like some of the KLF. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan, JD, but I like certain songs.
There we go.
What time is love?
Someone called Graham says, about time you had that Bubs bloke on again, isn't it?
No. Nah, we're not doing another foreign language pod. It was interesting while we did it, but there's just not enough Geordies listening to understand what was going on. And I'm sure he'll tell me he's not a Geordie. For those that haven't listened, obviously I did a special with Bubs. He came up here. It was good.
Yeah,
I listened. I enjoyed it. So, and he brought me a signed picture of Peter Gain. So.
Oh, you jammy bastard. Yeah. Oh, lovely. I listened to it on Monday, actually. It was good. Good laugh, good listen. And Pete upbeat
as well, which is good.
Positive. Pete says, if nothing sticks to Teflon, how does Teflon stick to a pan?
A pan
science, innit?
Yeah, there you go. That's one for Ben. He's the techie. I don't know. Here's what I want to know. Why, when you buy a non-stick saucepan, over time does it become a stick saucepan? So I've got a non-stick frying pan. I fry eggs in it. I'm not scraping it with wire wool, but over time, it suddenly the eggs start sticking to it.
It's planned obsolescence, mate.
I think that's the case on my phone.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is.
My contract is up this month, and I thought this time I'm not going to bother. I'm just going to let the... Because I'm not that bothered about new phones and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you've got moisture in your charging port, and I plugged my charger in, and my phone starts making a noise like a bloody ambulance. Like, no, don't plug this in. It's going to blow the world up. So I kind of take it out, and it's like, it's dry. I can see it's dry. There's no moisture in it. No, don't charge it. Get a new phone instead. Bollocks to you.
Moisture in your charging port. That's a band name if ever there was one, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it just? Do you know, I once actually auditioned for a band called Knuckle Bumfluff and the Mongol Babies. I might have said that before on here.
I don't think you have, because that's genius.
No, well, it's not, because actually it's racially insensitive.
Oh, okay.
Because the word Mongol, which is obviously racially insensitive, is actually derived from Mongolians in a very negative sense. So I haven't taken a political correctness course. I'm just aware of that. But we sang two songs. I sang Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson and All the Small Things by Blink-182. I say I sung two songs, I was scheduled to, but when they realised I didn't know the words to Beautiful People, I didn't get to sing the second song.
Wow. Okay, yeah. I mean, the only thing that I can add to that is there was a website that I used to follow, and they did a series of video game reviews, but in a musical style, and they reviewed Resident Evil 7 in the style of Marilyn Manson, but instead of saying The Beautiful People, they said The Resident Evil.
The Resident Evil.
Yeah. And every time I hear that song, that is all I can say. That's all I can hear when the chorus comes in. So
whenever I hear Marilyn Manson now, I just hear a song by somebody who's a bit too rapey for public consumption.
Yeah, he's a bit of a wrong one.
He's gone a bit Noel Clark, hasn't he?
I mean, there was always probably that side to him, allegedly.
Noel Clark? I didn't see that.
Marilyn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, God, if you didn't know Marilyn Manson was weird, I don't know what was wrong with you. You only had to look at him and go kind of like, oh, yeah, you're not going to look at Marilyn Manson and go, yeah, he's a straight-up guy. He's not going to be into weird shit, is he?
The best thing about Marilyn Manson, his real name's Brian.
Yeah, I quite like that. Great live, though. Didn't like any of his music, but saw him live at a festival, and I never liked the song Disposable Teens, which kind of now, looking back,
bit creepy.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? That's a little bit Michael Jackson, except that'd be Disposable Preteens.
Still could be worse. Could used to, you know, you may have used to have been a huge Lost Prophets fan.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Yeah, I was. Anyway,
I liked I had two little boys on vinyl by Rolf.
So. Oh, God, so did he. Right.
No, he didn't. Rolf was not convicted of anything with boys. It was teenage girls, and that doesn't particularly make it better, but it's an important distinction to make when listening to the song Two Little Boys, which should not be tarnished by Rolf Harris's later actions, because it is still a very meaningful message about friendship through life. So I'm not having that next.
You heard it here first, folks. Okay. Gary Hutchinson defending Rolf Harris.
No, you didn't hear that. I said I was defending the song. I said it shouldn't be tarnished by Rolf's later actions. I'm not defending a kiddie fiddler. I'm saying that the song should not be tarnished. Gary Glitter's songs were shit, right? There's no point you want to be in my gang, not a good song. Two Little Boys was a song with a very deep meaning that my granddad once recorded onto a cassette tape and sent me, and it touched me as a child, not in a literal way, no more Paris-type jokes. So I'm not having it. Two Little Boys was a good song, and it shouldn't be tarnished by Rolf's later actions. It's like people saying, if you listen to Bad by Michael Jackson, Michael Jackson's songs are still acceptable, even though he, you know, liked to rough and tumble with little boys or whatever. And you know, I'm not, just carry on. I'm not having it. It hurts me. I like Two Little Boys. Bollocks.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And Stu Wells, if you clip up me saying the words, I'd like two little boys. I'm not. I'll sue.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
We've run a bit, haven't we?
That's incredible. Right, what's the next question? I think that's all of them. Steve says, does Ben want the rest of this bucket of paint to do the other side of the fence in damn angry orange? I mean, it'll probably be something that Rach would do. And speaking of Rach, she has asked, I'd really like to know what's on the menu for tonight and should Ben cook? No, I shouldn't cook because I've cooked every night this week, sod off. Apart from maybe Tuesday. I don't know. Olivia says, what breed of dog should Jack let me have?
Shih Tzu. They're a great dog. They're loyal. You don't want a big dog, right? I thought about this, actually. I did think about this. You don't want a big dog because they take up a lot of room. And the bigger the dog, the more the likelihood is that they're going to smell. And that could make Jack go, I never wanted a bloody dog anyway. So you want a smaller dog. You don't want a handbag dog, you know, one that looks like it should be in a cage with a wheel and drink out of a little water bottle because they're just pathetic. So you want what I call a medium sized dog, Shih Tzu. Just because I have one, that's by the by. You also want a dog. And it sounds like a ball ache, but you want a dog that needs grooming, because a dog that needs grooming technically doesn't shed its hair. Don't get a dog that sheds its hair. Your house will smell revolting for the rest of your life. People will come to your house, and when they go, they'll go, smell a bit doggy in there. Right? We don't have that because our dog doesn't molt. So you want a dog that doesn't molt, Shih Tzu. You want a dog that's loyal, Shih Tzu. So get a Shih Tzu. And they're also quite cute looking as well. Sometimes I look at Charlie and he looks a little bit like a teddy bear. And I just kind of think, oh, you're really cute. Not rather than like this. You don't get a dog that dribbles as well. My brother had a dog that every time you went near it, slathering, you know, like a great big thing, a slather coming out of his mouth. It rubs it on your jeans. You have to be polite. Oh, the dog slathered on my jeans. And you kind of go, oh, I see. That's not a problem. And inside you're thinking, get a smaller dog. It doesn't slather.
Is there anything else that I can, you know, is there anything else that I can poke Gary with to make him drop the F-bomb again?
I'm quite pumped up, actually, so I think we need to wrap it up. Maybe Ben could edit out a couple of the swears, because I'm aware that quite a few people listen to this now. I think Jay Wright, I had a conversation, brief one over email with Jay Wright the other day, and he's like, oh, listen to the podcast. It's like, oh, should I really be swearing this much? I'm in it with two little boys. It's just a good song.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop the jokes then. Jake has just this second put a question. It says, which player from any division below would you like City to go all out for in this summer?
Any division below?
Yeah.
Don't know. I haven't really paid a lot of attention to the divisions below, to be honest.
Shall we save that one for next week when we've actually had a chance to do research?
I tell you what I do like. I like the right back Hartlepool.
Okay.
He was at Newcastle United for quite a few years. They released him and he was holding out for a deal. I read an article on him as well the other week. So I had a look on his stats on My Scout the other day, just out of interest. And yeah, I quite like the look of him. Jay Sherry. Yeah, quite like him. There's a few players in League Two that I do like the look of. One of them was actually at Grimsby, Jay Mattetti, but I think he was on loan there from Fleetwood. I think he's a player that could go on and do quite well. And I'm sure there's plenty of forwards. Who's the boy at Exeter? He's the one I'll go for. You're going to hear clicking again because I can't remember his bloody name. Is it Randell Williams? Randell Williams, I think, at Exeter, and he's out of he's out of contract, 24 years old, plays as a fullback or a winger, and I think that he is leaving them this summer, I think, on a free transfer. He was at Crystal Palace as a youngster. I like him. So
there we go. Well I wouldn't know, so that's your answer from me as well, I guess, and I think that's probably a good spot to wrap up for the week. Because I still have tears in my eyes from laughing at that impassioned defence. And yeah, we'll see you next week, I think, probably, when we can have some proper playoff discussions. All right, up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
90th minute and all your mates around watching the imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.